Welcome to the Swirl and Sip podcast, where we keep it real, talking about womanhood, parenthood, and marriage. I'm your host, Sasha.
And I'm Sheree. And if this is your first time tuning into us, this is what you need to know about us. We're wives, we're boy moms, and we love wine, though we're not experts. This is Life Uncensored.
So get your wine glasses and your favorite bottle and get ready for today's episode. So, of course, we always like to start each episode with what we are sipping on. And today we have moved on to the reds. So, of course, we started last week with a gold Chardonnay,
gold,
which we surprisingly both liked. But this week we are drinking on a Da Vinci Chianti.
Chianti.
There we go. I was like, as soon as it came out, I know I said it wrong. Chianti. And so this wine that Sheree already has made a face of, she does not enjoy it.
It's not that.
It's confusing, you said?
I'm trying to figure it. Okay. It's not as bad. That you can't do a little. Yeah. You like it.
I like it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I have no idea what you're even talking about.
After the first sip, and I was just like, okay, I don't know what my brain expected, but it's actually just like drinking a Merlot or a Cab Sav. It's actually okay.
The first little drop.
So y'all don't understand. I had like this first drop and it was almost like just pure alcohol. It was like a taste of rubbing alcohol on my tongue. So I don't know. Maybe it's because I had just eaten or something did not vibe with the vibes, but it's okay. I just like, okay, so wow. I want you to know that I like the fact that I got a Chianti only because if I'm remembering correctly, this is from like Silence of the Lambs. That's one of my favorite lines. Fava beans and a Chianti.
That's why you picked this?
Yes, with the little
from Silence of the Lambs.
Yes. That's how I recognized it. I'm just going to let you know. I was like, we've never had a Chianti, but I definitely know what it is.
What year do you have?
Oh, girl, I do not have my bottle in front of me. I usually do.
Oh.
Whichever one you got.
The one I'm drinking is a 2018.
That's it.
But I feel like it might be one of those situations. This one's only 13%. You said we were all. What?
Hold on. See, you're going to make me run and get my bottle because I know mine is 13.5. Why does this happen?
Mine is 13.5.
So maybe I got the 2019.
Huh. You might have a different blend. But according to the tasting notes, so it says it's a medium weight of jammy flavors of ripe plums, cherries, and red fruit. It has a deep crimson color. That's not a lie. It definitely does. And it says it's a lively wine with a soft mineral finish. It has round tannins that linger and a long peppery finish.
It pairs well with all starters,
pasta. Yeah, the minerally.
The peppery.
Or the peppery finish.
That's what it was. It was the little spice that I had. Mm-hmm.
Oh, so this one says, okay, so it pairs well with starters, pastas, and meat dishes, and it's best served when slightly below room temperature at a 64 degrees.
So this is one that we should have chilled?
Correctly right now.
This is one. I'm pretty sure that this is going to be a tastings notes because I need to look at my bottle because I know I looked at this bottle. It was 13.5 in the one that I have. So now we got to do, now we're going to have to figure this out.
Vino corner. Mm-hmm.
Now we got to do a whole vino corner.
I still like it though. I don't know what you're talking about.
I mean, you know it's okay. I know you like red. I was going to say you like red. Like there's not a red that you don't like unless it's sweet. So
yeah. Yeah,
all right.
Pretty much.
Well, it's all right.
So, but like I mentioned, it's a Da Vinci. Say it, Sheree.
Chianti. It's Chianti? Da Vinci Chianti. And depending on the year, you might get a different percentage, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
It's Chianti. Take away the ch.
Key. There we go. There you go.
I said, just take away the ch.
On the bottle, it says it's a cooperative of over 200 individual growers in Florence and Pisa.
That's beautiful.
I love me some Italian wine. Yeah. So you won't hear me complain about some wine.
Yeah. You're not going to complain about a red wine ever.
Not at all. But we are super excited because today we have a guest on and we have wanted to talk about this. We kind of always touch on this subject a little bit. Y'all know that we are big proponents of self-care and like Sheree and I guess we're not really new parents anymore, are we?
No, we can't be call ourselves new.
Somewhat in the game.
I mean, after 3 years in, you can't call yourself completely new, but I'm definitely not old. Why you had to go there? That's not the point. the age is 3.
Almost closer to 4 for you.
Yes.
But today our guest is Mercedes Thomas. She is a MSN, an APRN, a CPNP, and an IBCLC.
So, you know, acronyms. Look, give us those titles. I was going to say, I need to know those titles.
The short and sweet is I'm a certified pediatric nurse practitioner. APRN is just advanced practice registered nurse. So that encompasses any nurse that has like an advanced degree or a master's degree or a doctorate. And then the IBCLC is International Board Certified Lactation Consultant. So I'm a lactation consultant, to keep it simple. And then, look, now I'm forgetting my own titles on there. I think that's it that you said on there. And like, MSN. Okay. MSN is a master's in science and nursing.
Yep. Yeah, I was like, I knew APRN, I knew APRN, and I knew MSN. No, awesome. The other ones I was like,
So who do you know that's a nurse?
I have multiple friends who
are
nurses.
I was like, you had to have, because otherwise,
multiple, and I used to work in a place. So
okay, yeah,
yes, but yes, continue,
like Mercedes,
Sasha.
Mentioned. Yeah, so she has all of the acronyms, which we love. She's a healthcare consultant, a writer, pediatric nurse practitioner, and a certified lactation consultant, which she said. And she's also the author of the best-selling book, What is the Baby? The Modern Mama's Guide to Confidently Caring for Your Baby and Surviving the Postpartum Period, which is a book to help expectant mothers and new parents transition into the new normal of parenthood. Her book is, I guess, technically it's out since this is supposed to be May. It came out April 30th.
When this episode
in recording time, but we're there in when you're listening.
We're there in listening time.
Yeah, it's queued up and ready to go. So yeah,
there you go.
There we go. She's also the founder of the Thomas Health Education and Consultant, where she teaches classes on infant education, prenatal and postpartum health, and breastfeeding to families to help them simplify the first year of parenthood. And she has over 12 years of working in both the neonatal intensive care unit. I do know what NICU stands for.
Yes.
And pediatrics. And she says her mission is to combine her nursing expertise with her experiences as a mom to provide evidence-based education to families and reduce maternal child health disparities. So
you know, I love me an intellectual.
You are so funny.
You might be the most distinguished guest we've had. So.
I love me some intellectuals.
Distinguished with down to earth. Distinguished with down to earth. So
look,
Sasha
always say this. We proudly proclaim the Sophista Ratchet because I got lots of letters behind my name, but I promise you, it doesn't come through all the time.
Yeah,
here,
you know,
but that's the thing.
We have to be ourselves, and I think that's what makes it so unique when we are distinguished, right? And then we are also putting representation to that, right? So
exactly.
Like, even in my book, I made a joke the other day, Dr. Sears isn't going to tell you to pack your scarf, right? In your overnight bag for the hospital or the birth center. Like, you're not going to get that. And I actually say to people, if you're reading this and it went over your head, just keep reading. Like, some people won't know what I'm talking about. And that's fine. But, you know, I have to be me.
Like, that wasn't for you. If you don't get it, it wasn't for you. See, that's why I said this is perfect. We love this already.
So we wanted to bring you on the show to talk about surviving the fourth trimester. And that wasn't a term I heard, the fourth trimester, until I was pregnant. And I don't think it's something that we talk about a lot.
I don't even think I heard it until after. Like, I truly think I heard it after I had my son, and looking backwards, I was like, oh, no one ever said, we don't have questions of like, how's the fourth trimester going? You know what I mean?
Because we don't think about, especially in this country where we're not given a lot of time to transition from not having a baby to now we have this thing that we have to keep alive. And it's so focused on baby that we don't deal with all of the things that we as women deal with from just having had said baby.
Yeah.
So, absolutely.
I was going to say, like, we did talk about that in a past episode with Mommy Tribe, because like, we've spoken about me, Sasha, and one of our other friends all had babies a month, 5 weeks apart. So all of us were able to lean on each other. Wow. So that was where we were able to say, girl, how you doing? Like checking in with you, because we were going through it at the same time, but there was no other official way. Mm. So yes, it's so important.
Yeah. That troubles me a lot that no one,
I had like the, you know, when you go to the doctors at your 6-week checkup and they give you the questionnaire.
Right. But that's kind of it.
Oh, are you depressed? That's pretty, as long as you don't check anything, you know, that stands out, you know, they don't really ask, how are you coping? Like, how are you dealing?
So yes, that's exactly why we wanted to make sure that we had a topic about this, because it is so important and yet so underutilized and so underserved. So Sasha, let's get into it.
Before we get into about how we transition to that and like your tips for surviving that, I want to know what made you get into the field of like being a nurse and specifically like a NICU nurse, a pediatric nurse and things like that. What made you decide to go that field? Because I know it can be very fulfilling when you're dealing with babies, but also probably, you know, have not so happy moments either.
Difficult.
So what made you go into that?
So the pediatric portion of it, it was kind of ingrained in me. Growing up, I would be with my cousin and I would have like my mom's old checkbook, and I would sit him on the couch and kind of like as if I was a therapist. I didn't know what I was doing at the time, right? But I had like this little green pocketbook and I would pull out my thing and I would just be, so it was kind of ingrained in me. I've always loved kids. I babysat, I worked in daycares, kind of working up into nursing school and then while I was in nursing school. And so it was always kind of a natural thing. Where the NICU came in was, it was just an opportunity that we learned about while I was in school. You don't specialize until you're out of nursing school, but we did have some really good opportunities to get some specialty experiences. We call them like an internship or a preceptorship.
Yes.
And so I was able to get a NICU preceptorship. But at that point I was like, I really want to be a pediatric nurse, but then NICU was like a close second to that. And so I did my preceptorship, and my preceptor, I'm trying to remember her name. I don't know. It was at Piedmont Hospital in Atlanta. And I wonder if she's still there, but she was fantastic. Okay. Even in the most stressful of moments, like emergency situations, calm included me. When we went to the adult floors, we were like, go wipe up room 8s behind and turn them. So like, we didn't get that same feeling, the warm and fuzzy feeling when we were out on the floors with the adults. It was kind of like, do this, do that. And I had a horrible preceptor. She actually told me one time it wasn't okay to cry and reprimanded me for that because I got really close with the patient. So my experience in adult healthcare, it solidified that I was in the right place when I had these pediatric experiences, even though they're not always happy. But I had a really good preceptor, and also really good instructors for maternal health. The unfortunate part is in nursing school, we only get about, I think, I want to say it was like 8 weeks of each portion. Mm. So a little bit of L&D, a little bit of like neonatal, a little bit of pediatrics, whereas adult is the majority of our curriculum.
Oh. So
that having those experiences helped me. And then I decided to go on to take a job in the NICU. Everyone's always like, oh, you need to do adult care. You need to do this. They tell you what they think you're supposed to do as this kind of old school mindset of nursing. That you need to go pay your dues on the med-surg floor. And so I didn't take that way. I went into the NICU. I was hired in one of the largest NICUs in the Southeast, a huge delivery hospital in Atlanta, Georgia. We had 100-bed NICU bed.
Gosh.
And so I just went and did it. And it wasn't always happy. I don't want to get too graphic because I don't want to like scare the listeners, but
we do know that like, it's not, there are very, we talked about maternal health care. And
I mean,
like,
if it's the NICU,
it's
if
NICU,
it is the NICU, so, that, I mean, that is, yeah.
And so I loved everything about it, but I couldn't deal with the death. So that was, I could do everything. Yeah. Like I was known for being skilled. Like I had fantastic preceptors again, the neonatologists, they were all great. We all worked together as a team. That's actually the biggest place I've ever worked in my entire career where it functioned like a team. Like there generally was no drama. Like people always like, when you leave, you'll see. And I left and I saw. I mean, I've had some other jobs I enjoyed, but like for a hospital setting, that hospital, it didn't get any better than that.
So you mean to tell me that every hospital isn't like Grey's Anatomy, which everyone seems to think? Like people aren't having sex in the like break room? Oh my gosh.
I wasn't involved in that. Maybe there was somebody in the break room.
Everyone seems to think that there's like, when you go in a hospital, it's like everything. No, it's like, no, it's really not.
Or that all the nurses are dating the doctors. I didn't work in a teaching hospital. So I think the things that are a little, I worked in a teaching hospital. I worked here in the DMV in a teaching hospital. So a lot different than it is when you're in a hospital where there aren't any residents or anybody training, right? So you have your set doctors that have been doctors and experts in their field for a very long time, as opposed to people kind of coming in rotating and they're younger and then there's younger nurses. And so I can imagine that that type of setting is probably a little bit more like Grey's Anatomy than the setting that I was in. So
I got you. Yes.
I want to commend you for being in a hospital that had 100 baby beds.
Yes.
Because that just seems so daunting.
Like, I'm just like, oh my gosh. I'm like, 100? Like at a time?
That's so many babies.
It was a huge delivery hospital. So in the Southeast, I think at that point in time, which I graduated in 2008 from nursing school. So at that point, I think they were doing something like 20,000 deliveries a year, just to give you a an outlook. So you needed kind of capacity for the hospital to be able to hold. And we had different units. So we had a unit where there were less sick babies. So maybe they just had an issue like with their blood sugar. They needed to get some help with eating, that kind of thing. And then like, you had your really sick babies, which is where I landed and couldn't get out. Nursing is one of those things. You don't get a raise for your performance. You just get rewarded with the hardest cases, a lot more work, you know?
It's social work. Oh my gosh. It's like that social work.
Yes. And I love the better social I did my too.
Job. The better I do my job, the more work they give me. I don't want that reward. I really want the money. Like I want my bonuses. I do not need you to, because I'm really, really, really good at this. Don't give me all of the really, really, really hard things.
And there was a point after I lost my grandmother where I said, I cannot do this. Like having really sick babies. Yeah. And I didn't really, that was the part I could never do the postmortem care. And like I said, I don't want to get too graphic, but you know, in babies, we like to think that things are always happy. There are losses. There are losses. And so that was the part I could get the family through. I mean, people would always say, man, you look so calm during an emergency. Like you're just kind of, and so like, I'm just good with a poker face.
Oh, that's Sasha.
I mean, so, you know, it could be like mayhem happening and I'm just doing what I need to do. But I can also be compassionate with the family. But at that time, the baby and saving their life or making that intervention to save their life, hopefully, is what we're looking at. And so people would be like, you're so calm. And so I had this kind of thing where, oh, she can handle it. And I think you guys talked about this in the self-care episode. So I don't know if this translates over to like us being women of color. Mm-hmm. Oh, she's stoic. She's that, like, you don't know what's going on in the person's head. You're strong. She can handle it.
We're strong. We're super women.
So even when I said, I can't handle it, I cannot take these types of assignments.
Like, you my seem grandmother like you can handle it.
Right. And they just kept on, oh no, you're fine.
I'm like, what?
So I actually came into a really sick baby, like super sick, micro preemie, like, and one of my coworkers actually stepped in. I'll never forget, and took the assignment from me to switch with me, to give me. So that was the type of compassion that I felt, you know, the other nurses, and nothing's perfect, right? But I knew we functioned even in a large unit as kind of a family structure. And whereas the leadership, like to them, it was like, okay, she can do the work. Let's just give it to her. It doesn't really matter.
It's really sucks being efficient, but yes, that goes into everything where that actually goes into what we're talking about being able to take care of ourselves and knowing when to set limits, because that's everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Sasha.
So because you've had all of this crazy experience, I'm sure, in working in a NICU. That just, I know it's probably so intense. So before we get to that fourth trimester and mm-hmm. you have expected parents, what tips can you give them mm-hmm. for what they're looking for healthcare, for pediatric healthcare for their child? Because we don't know, especially, I mean, we did a whole episode on maternal healthcare and the outcomes for Black and Brown women and all of that that comes with it. You know, we're more likely to have issues. We're more likely to die or, you know, have issues with the baby. So what should parents be looking for when it comes to pediatric healthcare when they're getting ready to deliver a baby?
Absolutely. So the same way that you're preparing for other things in your third trimester, you can start to prepare for your pediatrician then too. So some people have the advantage of having a friend, maybe they're in a support group, one of those settings where they can ask a neighbor, like kind of, who did you go to? Who are the pediatricians in the area? We have a lot of online access, but that doesn't give you the wherewithal to figure out if that's the right fit for you and your family, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So some of the things that you want to think about is making a list, maybe pick maybe 2 to 3 practices in your area and figure out if, and just kind of make your list. What are your priorities? What are your non-negotiables? Do you want to breastfeed or formula feed or both? Like, those are the kind of things that you want to think about when you're selecting, because you want to make sure that that person is aligned with you, and also make sure that the other pediatricians in that office are aligned together, right? Because I can go see Dr. Smith, right? And maybe Dr. Smith is out. Is
not the one delivering your baby.
Yeah.
And so I will say this.
You won't rotate through a pediatrician's office in most cases. That's not the setup. They try to keep you with the primary, but I did rotate. It was a requirement to rotate through my GYN's office. Mm-hmm. So just in case your primary doctor was not there, you at least met every single doctor in that practice at some point. And so that leads me to the important question. Okay, you focus on these guidelines. What do your other colleagues do? Because if Dr. Smith is out, your child is sick sometimes, right? So you just got to get in where you fit in on the schedule, where they're going to let you get in.
Yes.
So you just need to see somebody that day. And hopefully you also do have a pediatrician's office that can see you same day. Especially if you have a small child that's under the age of 1, that they will get you in so that you don't have to sit in an ER in an urgent care. If they're not trying to do that for you, unless it's just one pediatrician, you know, sometimes there's a solo practice, so it's just one. If they're not trying to do that for you, you probably should make a list, expand your list a little bit, because they should want to keep you out of the ER and out of urgent cares, especially during COVID. You don't want to run into those places for a ear infection, something that can easily be taken care of in your pediatrician's office, a diaper rash. These are the things that we see, because I've worked on both sides, on the admin side, in the insurance company, and then on the patient care side. And so we see high utilization, we call it, of emergency services for someone going to see a diaper rash, spitting up, normal baby, reflux, earaches. So these are things that we as pediatric providers should be able to do in the office setting to keep you out and keep you healthy.
You just confirmed why I love my doctor. Even though I have a friend who had a very negative experience recently, I'll chalk half of it up to COVID, but I love my pediatrician. I don't even remember how I got to my pediatrician, but the first visit, now I don't know about anyone else, but the way that I picked doctors and pediatricians is I go through the list. Of course, I'll choose my preference, but then I just go through names if they don't have pictures. And I'm just like, the way I chose the pediatrician was I looked at her name and I was like, I'm not sure of anything, but I know she's Black. I'm not sure of anything, but because I actually had someone who I worked with a very similar name. And I said, she's Black and I'm pretty sure that she's from the South. I guarantee it, and I was absolutely correct. But that was how I chose. That's how I chose my OBGYN, who did not end up being the person who delivered me. But I also knew the same thing, that rotation. So I had other people come in. Still didn't end up seeing the person who actually delivered me. But the person who delivered my son was actually someone I had met previously, because I've had to, you know, they tell you to come in for different things. So it was like a worry I had. I came in and I saw that same him, and it was a male doctor. Once again, things that I was like, no, I'm okay. He was so wonderful. And I tell people, like, we've talked about it on this podcast before. Like, he came in so calm because I had a unplanned C-section. It wasn't emergency, but it was like, it's not the thing ain't thinging the way it's supposed to think. And we not worried completely, but we know that this shouldn't continue. And he explained everything so easily that I was just like, I am calm. So unlike a lot of Black women who have had really horrible horror stories, especially with coming in, not knowing, overdue, and then like this thing happening, because I definitely cried because I was like, I go to the bathroom, and it was like they lost his heart rate. Like, it was like that he was just playing hide and seek in there. It was something happened. Yeah. But I was like, I have to pee because I'm 9 months pregnant and overdue. And every time I go to the bathroom, they lose his heart rate. So I was sitting there and my husband was like, it's okay, sweetie. You know you have to go pee. I said, I don't want to go pee every time I go to pee. And they was like, and like he was so calm. And the care that I got afterwards was like, I was like, I need him. He now works in, guess where? Atlanta.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So when I tell you that, it was like, because I want to have another kid. I said, hey, I want this doctor.
Right. Yeah. Here? Like, how do we find him? Right. They're in Atlanta now. Like,
he is actually
to Atlanta.
Like, exactly. And she was like, he's actually, you know what? He's not there anymore. He's in Atlanta, but considering you love him so much, because she had another person who I think just moved down. I say recommend him. He was amazing. I promise you, nothing went the way I wanted, but I felt okay because I was like, they also gave a good aftercare. Like, I did get to see my doctor before I left the hospital because she was doing her rotations.
Oh, yeah,
she was like,
I got to see mine too.
See, and Sasha had a situation where she like came in and was just like, we're having a baby
in 45 minutes. Yeah, it was less than 4 hours actually.
Wow.
Yeah, he came super quick. But one thing I wanted to ask you, especially because you're a lactation consultant. So I picked my hospital because my primary care doctor, she's a Black woman, and I was asking her, like, you know, what's a good hospital for me to go to? Should I pick one that's closer to home? And she said, no, pick one that's closer to your job, because you're more than likely will probably go into labor when you're at work, just because of how often you're there. And so I said, okay, I'll pick one close to my job. And the hospital that I delivered at, it's a really good hospital, but it's like the number one in like trying to, it's Inova in Virginia. And so they're like really big on like breastfeeding.
Lactation.
And we had lactation. It was an African nurse. She was amazing. I don't know what she did to Stokely, but she just stuffed them on me. And I was able to like breastfeed in the hospital a little bit, but it was really hard for me. And I went to the class and everything like that, and that they had in the hospital to kind of like, you know, show us how to do it, because it's really not as intuitive as you think it is. And so one of the things that I struggled with when I came home was I couldn't breastfeed him. Like, I got a little nipple shield. He breastfed the one time and that was it. Like, I could never really get him to latch. And so I did 3 months worth of pumping, because I didn't want to do formula. I was like, no, like, I'm going to do this. And
like, I'm going to do it.
And it was so hard. It was just
hard.
Yes, it
is hard. I've done it too.
to be tied to a pump. And so, like, as a lactation consultant, as someone who, you know, tries to help mothers prepare for things like that, because nobody told me about things like that. And I felt like it put so much stress on me as a mother to like, okay, I gotta every 2 hours, I gotta, you know,
we get told everybody can do it. It's absolutely like, it's this picture of like, it's a seamless process. Like, you have a baby and obviously bam, it happens. And it's like, it's so many more steps than just put the baby on there and the baby's like, everything's gonna flow. I had an easier experience. I was able to breastfeed. My goal was 6 months, and I think I made it to my 6 month goal. And I know I made it to my 6 month goal with breastfeeding exclusively. And then I started to transition and everything. But it was one of those things that I was like, my experience was really easy. I had an efficient eater. That's what I remember that phrase, because I said, a what? She's like, well, he's just very efficient, because it was like, And then the other side, boop. And I was like, really? You're done? And like, I didn't have a long experience. So I remember me and Sasha having a lot of conversations where it was just like, I'm supposed to be able to feed my baby. And that's the thought that mothers get, right?
So like, what do you tell these mothers who, like in cases like mine, who are just so stressed out? Nobody told them that, you know, this is motherhood. And it's exactly, you know, this fourth trimester, you know, my main goal is to feed my child. And literally I'm bringing him home the first night he's home and we're feeding him with a syringe because I can't, like, I'm crying with my husband because I'm like, I can't make the milk. He's not latching. I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. So like, what are your tips for moms to survive things like that? Because it is, I think it's just so much pressure that we place on ourselves. Yeah, and we don't even realize that that's what's coming when we bring the baby home. We're just thinking like, oh, like we're parents now. Mm-hmm. Like
we don't realize that after the hospital, it's so beautiful in the hospital because you have help, you got round the clock care. Yeah. And then you go home and that first night, because I specifically remember crying the night, the next morning, like we had spent the night and it was just like, I got up the next morning. It was like, my brain realized I survived the night. I burst into tears. Have no clue what, I don't know what I was feeling, but I burst into tears. For
it's
like
reality kind of sets in.
And then I was just like, I was like, I don't know why I cried just now. No one told me.
Yeah. So one of the main things is, which Sasha, you said you did this, but I think they unfortunately missed a little bit of the mark with not kind of telling you some of the pitfalls. So I like to, I actually give a list in my book on what kinds of things you should be looking for in a class, because all classes aren't equal, right? If you go to a childbirth class and they don't explain to you that there's a possibility that some things could go wrong, or if you go to a breastfeeding class and they don't explain to you that there are some things that you need to watch out for and what to do if those things happen, then they miss the mark a little bit if we're just talking about sunshines and rainbows, because that's when you really need the education and those like kind of things in your parent toolbox is when things aren't going right. So that's why we take the classes, to know what's abnormal and what to do in those situations. You don't have to be perfect, but know what your resources are around you. So one of the main things is, there's lactation consultants, you know, in the hospital, but then there's also private practice lactation consultants. So you will have lactation consultants that can come to your home sometimes. I know it's a little bit dicey in COVID, but people can come to your home. You have La Leche League. You have some of the baby cafes. You have different things that are available to you. So you never should have to really feel like you're 100% alone. So that's my biggest thing, to let new parents know they're not alone. There are resources. Postpartum Net, there are Postpartum Support International. They have a slew of support groups all online. I mean, from support groups for moms that are Latino, Latina. They have like lesbian and gay families. They have a Black mama support group. The gamut of things that you can tap into online, and they're free to you. You're not having to pay for these things. Parents suffering from postpartum depression, anxiety. So these things are available to you, us, and that's one of the great things about now having this virtual support that really came to the forefront during the pandemic. But what I would say is, find your support beforehand if you can. So have a resource list. When you go to those classes, be proactive and ask, like, what's available to me after I have the baby? Because it's true, in the hospital, you know, and I can say it on both ends, I've worked with breastfeeding families in the hospital and on the community side. So we're going to be able to get you and kind of get you the basics to try to help you to get latched on. But if that doesn't happen in that 2 to 3 days, then you kind of might feel like you're by yourself.
Yeah.
So I would suggest finding someone local to you that can be of support, either a private practice IBCLC. So like I said, they can come to your home, or either try to tap into one of the free support groups. Like I said, La Leche League, Breastfeeding.
I've heard of La Leche League.
Oh, wait, I have to plug one more thing in. So one of my colleagues, Ohio, I'm going to mess this one up. I'll give it to you for your show notes. But this is also free, and it's based in Ohio, but it's 24/7 free support as well. And so, yes, so that needs to be said, that they service any family anywhere. It's a grant through Ohio, but that's also another one that I want to make sure that you guys get. And they're 24/7. You can call up and get some help too, which is great because it's a hotline as opposed to like La Leche League. Sometimes you have to like kind of make an appointment, figure out when the leaders are available because they're volunteers, right? A lot of these things. The other thing I want families to know is that although there are volunteers, sometimes you may need to pay for some of those services. So I think sometimes people don't realize that lactation is like if you go to your pediatrician, you pay a copay. Unfortunately, some of the insurance companies, they're supposed to pay, right, with the Affordable Care Act, but they're not paying. Try to call and find out what your benefits are. Sometimes they'll cover a lactation course for you. So you can submit that receipt to your insurance company and get some reimbursement back. So just kind of think about your resources available to you. Try to do a tour with your pediatrician, right? So you can do a virtual one, even if you can't go into the office, do a virtual tour. Let them FaceTime you in the office, meet all the pediatricians before you make your decision. Ask what do you have? Do you have any, how do you feel about supporting breastfeeding mothers, right? Because that can make or break you if you walk into an office, Sasha, right? And you're like crying, boo-hooing, and your pediatrician's like, girl, just take this formula. Not like that, right? But they're just like giving you the can. Here's
a, it's just when it's, and, it's I think that that's the other thing. It's like, I remember I had, it was 2 weeks after. It was, it was 2 weeks after I had a pain. Of course, after the risk of having a C-section is blood clots. So I was in pain, like crying pain, like the night before I called and they were, and then it kind of subsided. It came back that morning and they were like, I had wonderful aftercare. Like they were just like, come in to the emergency room, like now, now. Good. They came and got me in and like within, I swear within 20, like even not even 20 minutes of me being there, I had already had an EKG and some other stuff and like was set up for a CAT scan. I mean, CT scan was with contrast, the thing with that. Of course, they were like, it's not harmful. Like they have the research that says it's not harmful, but if you're unsure because iodine and things like that and the possible passage, you're able to formula feed. And they gave me, like, of course, I have a whole child, I had a whole newborn and I'm like, so like he had already eaten, but of course, by the time I'm out, I'm like, so can I? And like, they were like, it is perfectly fine, but it's up to you. And I remember crying in the office with my in-laws. It was my in-laws took me. And I was just like, I don't want to formula feed, but at the same, it was like, I had to wait.
Yeah, you were conflicted.
I was very conflicted. And I think at the end of the day, I ended up just saying, if the doctor said it is okay, and I just moved forward with it. But I did have the bottles, and I was just like, I would not like to, but I did have the support of being able to say, it's okay if you feel like they gave me the choice. It's okay.
Do want to say, even though I'm a lactation consultant, I'm a nurse, a pediatric nurse first, before any of that. So although some people's viewpoint is if it's not the breast, you can't do it. Like, that's not my viewpoint. I support families either way. I mean, I won't say that it's not best, right? Because of the nutrients and it's natural and all of those things, but that may not be best for you and your family. may not be what you want to do. So it depends on your conviction, like with breastfeeding. Maybe some things are just not mentally, you're not mentally capable of sustaining trying to figure out what to do. Maybe you have to go back to work at 6 weeks. I don't know what your situation. Maybe you're the primary breadwinner. I don't know whatever the situation is. Maybe you just don't want to breastfeed. Maybe you have a history of like sexual abuse. I don't, whatever it may be, you could have anything. And we need to be cognizant as healthcare professionals.
She breastfed, I think, for a month, and then she has an older daughter, and she was like, you know, that was it for her. She didn't she didn't feel like doing it anymore. She was like, cool. But I really like that you pointed out to try to figure out all of those resources before the baby comes, because I know in my case, because I didn't expect to have these issues, but I don't know what I thought. I was baby latches on.
You thought that it's like, well,
in the movies, they just, you know, they put it there and you're good. And so when I'm sitting there Googling, like, because my sister-in-law was like, well, why don't you try a lactation, you know, consultant or things like that. So I'm Googling, and after the baby's already here, I'm just so tired. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, I don't even feel like calling. Like, you know, I'll just do the pumping, and, you know, mm-hmm. we'll just deal with it that way, because this is easier right now. Like, you know, every 2 hours we get baby sleeping, then baby's awake. And so even trying to find the mental space, the mental mm-hmm. energy to make these calls to figure out, like, how can you help me? Like, absolutely. That it was hard in that time space to even do it. So I didn't take advantage of any of that.
Not to mention sleep and take care of yourself, like, absolutely. During that time, because, like, you know, that was my mood time. That was what I call it, my mood time, whenever I was pumping. But it's like, to be in mood time, as well as, like, okay, so I do eventually have to shower.
Yeah,
that, like, we don't think of how when we're mm-hmm. like pumping or in the fourth trimester, there's so many things that we have to be able to do, along with now a little tiny person who cannot do anything. Absolutely. For themselves.
Yes.
Anything. And that takes time to sleeping, eating, taking care mm-hmm. of washing, changing them, changing uh-huh. yourself, making sure that you're okay, because they don't tell you, like, I love that now social media, and I guess it's becoming more common and understood to have the support of seeing, like, you wear a diaper after. No one tells you about that. No one says, hey, are you ready to wear a diaper when you're done?
And I'm like, what? Spray. For me, like, I have spray. Yeah.
I didn't have spray.
Yeah, I had spray. I had the cold packs. They gave me so many things when I came home from the hospital.
That mm-hmm. little bottle was life.
Oh, yeah, the Perry bottle.
That is life. That is life-giving. And I just was like, the things that you don't, like, that's just to not, I went through surgery and I came home with a child.
No joke.
Care for a child.
No joke.
It's like,
so that brings me to your book then. So your book that is already out, came out April 30th. it's What Is the Baby? The Modern Mama's Guide to Confidently Caring for Your Baby and Surviving the Postpartum Period. Can you just tell us a little bit more about the book and, like, who benefits from reading the book, why moms, parents should go out and buy this book? Because I do think, just from the title, I feel like it could help.
Yeah. I'm like, it sounds helpful. I shall buy it now, even though I want to have another child, but I'm like, it can help. Yeah, it can help.
Yeah. Give it to a friend. You can always, it's an ebook too. The paperback will be out, but you can always gift those things to your friend. It'll mm-hmm. be also on Kindle Unlimited too. So it'll allow people to get it that way as well. But yeah, so the book, What in the Baby, like, if you pick up the title, you already kind of know it's not like your average stiff, like, book. So I wanted that to be clear. I even threw that it's for the modern mama, right? So what we did 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, whatever your great grandma, mm-hmm. your great auntie told you, this book is not for them. So this is for the modern mom, the mom that is trying to figure things out right now in modern times. And so in order to really prepare, like I said, you don't want to prepare when you are in a situation that is hard. You're already stressed. The fourth trimester, just to define it, is that first 12 weeks after you've had your baby. So you're super vulnerable, right? We're all emotional regardless. Mm-hmm. And if you have any mental health like things that were going on prior to having your baby, those things can be highlighted even more in a way that you couldn't even imagine, right? So if we were to go into the grocery store right now, because that's probably one of the more crowded places now during the pandemic, one mm-hmm. out of eight women in that grocery store is suffering from postpartum depression. So just to put it in easy perspective, as you're passing by eight women, one of those women that you've passed by represents someone that could be suffering from postpartum depression. And so having known that, we need to prepare before. I won't get, like, too specific, but I know someone that is doctorally prepared in her field, and she didn't have any idea, and it's in a healthcare field, not in nursing, not a doctor, but she had no idea what postpartum depression was.
Wow.
Doctorly really? Prepared in a healthcare provider role. Yes. Even though it's not like Eastern medicine, you still have a doctoral role like in your field in healthcare, and you did not know what that was. So that says to me, this person that is beyond educated, what does that mean mm-hmm. for the average mom and parent walking around?
Absolutely.
What if they don't know anything about this and then they just, boom, get hit with the breastfeeding issues? They get hit with the body perception. Like, yeah, what's happening with my body? All of these things.
We like, did an episode on that already.
Look, exactly. I was looking up because I'm like, the book is out technically, right? Mm-hmm. But I was looking it up and I'm just like, yo, this is great. We need things like this though, because like you said, I think that's so important to think before you get there. And mm-hmm. you said what I always think of. The reason that we do any kind of training, any kind of practice, mm-hmm. the reason we have fire drills and all the rest of the things mm-hmm. is not because everything goes right. It's like, hey, if everything's going wrong, what do you do? How do you know? And I think back to like my birth classes, and mm-hmm. I do remember when they got to like, these are the different interventions that could happen. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. like, you know, they started going through tools and I said, what, like, does this happen? They were like, it happens. Yes. I appreciate that they said it, yes. it happens.
Yes.
No, I can't say how often or if it would happen to you, but absolutely. It happens. And I need absolutely. You to know what that is. And I'm like, awesome. I ended up not needing any of those tools.
I went
tools.
In very unprepared.
You
I went in so very it, I didn't and, take a class. I didn't.
Oh, I thought you said you took a class that. On breastfeeding. Did I miss that?
So I took one while I was with child when he was already born. So
At that,
because it was a
now
breastfeeding
that,
hospital.
I understand. I see. That makes sense.
Yeah, it was a breastfeeding hospital. So at the hospital you. After we you. After I had delivered, then they were like, okay, this is how you do it. And, you know, like, let's practice and things like that. And that was like the second or third day I was there.
Got it.
But I was like, I didn't take a birthing class.
No,
I didn't
understand
take a child
now.
Anything
that makes a
class.
Lot of sense to me now.
It was
because I was like, how could they give you a class, girl, and not tell you like what could happen or give you some resources?
But even during that class, though, they didn't like, I feel like, the one thing about the hospital was, you know, because they were very much breastfeeding. Mm. And I get it. That's the type of hospital it was. But they didn't really, I felt like they didn't prepare me mm-hmm. even in that little class. Okay, like if they're not latching, this is what you can do.
Yes,
or like
yes.
these are resources that you can yeah. have. So when I went home, I wasn't prepared for that when I
you
went home.
You weren't prepared for things to go wrong.
That makes
and,
sense.
And you weren't thinking, you weren't prepared for the difficulties. Like mm-hmm. all of us get prepared for everything going smooth. Like you pop your titty out and bam, here we go. Baby's here. And it's like, absolutely. I had the experience of like, once I got the right hold, I had a nurse who was like, I was just like, and she said, you're a little large. Like, as we've, I got a lot. And she was like, here, try this hold. Bam. Perfect, no problems. I was like, got it, football, get it. So I was good from there. I had a nurse that one of the nurses, I also had conflicting nurses that
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I had one that was like, babies are lazy, you have to wake them up to eat. And I was like, I'm sleep what? Okay, so I'm over here trying to wake up.
Guess
and
what?
Like,
she's
breastfeed.
Not one of the modern
like,
nurses,
I was like,
though.
Because I'm sitting here like, that's why I was like, what? I have to wake the baby up.
Because
like,
that's something I heard too when I was training. Like,
okay.
It's something someone told her and she's regurgitating.
Like, it was this
me,
one, like,
the
babies are lazy and they need to be woken up. And I said, I don't, that didn't fly with me because I said, no, we both wanted to sleep. I also realized that was when I had the most difficulty. I would wake up and he's mm-hmm. like, pissed. He does yeah. not want to mm-hmm. eat my child today. As a toddler, when he wakes up, he don't want nothing to do with nobody for at least 30 minutes. So I was like, still kind of tracks.
My son heads straight to the pantry. He's also three. So this morning, actually, he decided, I don't know how he got in, because I put one of the child safety things on my pantry. That's how much I'm so over him climbing in there. Mm. And he climbs on the shelves. Like, the shelves are not meant to hold your 30 pounds, okay? Mm. Like, one day you're going to fall. And so what he did this morning, I guess, I don't know if I left it open by accident, my husband did, but he got in there and like I heard him ripping something in the hallway, and he had gotten the graham cracker, like ripped the box, like savage ripped it, like not open the top, but the half of the top was missing, and he was gonna get him some graham crackers, and I know my husband fed him, like, because I just heard him say like something about waffles. So I'm like, really? That's what you do? But like, yeah, so
this is what we do. Yeah. But that's like you said there, I appreciate that your book touches on the old, like the fact that there were old school ways of doing things. Mm-hmm. And granted, yes, we do look to the past to know like there's some things that just work and they work and they continue to work. But recognizing that that doesn't work right now is mm-hmm. great to know. Cause I promise you, like when I figured out, I had the nurse that was like, you're sleepy, he's sleepy, let him sleep. It's fine. He will eat when he needs to eat. Mm-hmm. And I had that, it took so much pressure off me. And like, eventually I realized like if he's hungry, he'll eat. Like I can't, even to this day, if like he's three, mm-hmm. if Brendan don't want to eat, he's not going to eat. And I mean, he ain't going to get snacks, but you just, right. All right. So like, I have to tell like my mom and all of them, they're like, it's time to sit down and eat. I was like, look, mom, if he not eating, it's because he's not hungry.
Right.
He'll eat when he's hungry. Cause trust me, he don't miss a meal. And she's like, but I said, Ma, like, what do you think he's going to starve? Do you mm-hmm. think he's starving in 1 hour? Like,
but you know, that's the thing that we grew up, right? You're going to sit down here right now and do whatever and we're doing.
You will
right?
sit here until you will sit here yeah. all night until you eat.
Yeah. And eat it and eat all of it. Many right? of those. So, and
I'm
going to
say Sasha's a, picky eater. So I'm sure she's had many of
those. Oh, I had many of those growing up. Many of those where it was like, nope, you're gonna sit here until you finish. And now that I'm an adult, I don't eat those foods anymore because I had to sit.
Yeah, I think my husband went through that too, because he's not picky as in like fix this or that. He just like doesn't eat a lot of things.
Yeah, so, that's her.
So yeah.
She's just that.
So I want to ask you, just to kind of close out the episode, like, where can people find your book? Where can we find you on the interwebs and all of that good stuff? Go ahead and just let us know, let our audience know, because I really think your book will be helpful to a lot of expectant parents, a lot of moms mm-hmm. who don't know what the hell's about to happen and don't know what's coming.
and just so you know, it looks so beautiful. It's like such a pretty such a pretty book. I appreciate that. Sasha, you know, I tell people this. I am the advertisement person. So
you're visual.
Like, I'm visual. Oh, I'm the person who like all advertisements are made for me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I think that's why
we have Geico, because I love the gecko. I don't it's whatever. Fine. I am the person. If you want to do advertisements, know you got one person in the world.
Yes.
So where can we find you?
Yeah, so I'm at Mercedes, the NP, N as in nurse, P as in practitioner, on all the social outlets. So on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter. I'm not as active on Twitter, but yeah. So, and then my website is just MercedesThomas.com. The book can be found in the Kindle store. There will be a paperback edition coming out, but it'll be a little later on in the, well, this will be coming out May, but it'll be coming out probably in June or July, the paperback version. But you can get the book, download it straight to your Kindle, to your tablet. And I really, like I said, this book is, it's a short read, right? So I did that on purpose too, because as a new parent, you don't have time to read a 300, 400 page book. Nope. I want it to get straight to the point. And then at the end, for when you are preparing, there is a list of resources, national resources, for you to look at and say, if I have breastfeeding trouble, if my baby has a dairy intolerance while they're breastfeeding, if I want to look up my what to know about vaccines or immunizations for my baby, if I want to look up something for postpartum depression, if I want to look up a childbirthing class, like what are places that I can start that search? So that you have, I think that's probably like at least like 7 pages in the back of the book of just resources, and they're that's clickable awesome. Links. So it should take you straight to the website. Even like safe sleep. So what you should be looking for in a crib, in a car seat, all those things, just to really prepare yourself. Cause it's a lot. Okay. It's a lot, but it doesn't have to be overwhelming.
I love that you broke early. It down.
That is awesome.
I am definitely a lover of like tabs.
All of the resources.
Like all of them. I love the information you need. No, that's so important.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being on the show. Again, her book, Mercedes' book, is called What in the Baby? The Modern Mama's Guide to Confidently Caring for Your Baby and Surviving the Postpartum Period. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. This was so fun. I'm like, I want to do it again. What else can we talk about?
Look, we definitely.
Yeah, you were both fun. So thank you for that.
You can definitely, it sounds like you can get a lot of good information. So make sure you check out Mercedes' book and you can follow her on all of her social media. We want to hear from you guys too. If you are new parents, or if you remember that time when you were new parents and you experienced trouble during your fourth trimester and weren't expecting certain things, we would love to hear from you. You can always join the conversation that's probably happening on Instagram right now at Swirl and Sip Podcast, or you can email us and let us know at hello at swirlandsippodcast.com. If you want to hear more about what we're drinking on, you can always check out our wine list, which is on our website at swirlandsippodcast.com. Make sure that you subscribe to the podcast, rate and review, because that helps other people find the episode. And we want to get more information like this out to parents, to moms, because we do try to talk about things that are important and aren't as talked about. So the rating and reviewing helps other people find the show, but we're available on all of your major podcast platforms. If you want to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/swirlandsippodcast. You can join our Sip Squad for as little as $3 a month. You get behind the scenes access like us filming this, where you'll see me mute my microphone and tell my family that they need to be quiet for 5 more minutes.
You'll see me in my infamous face that I made when I first tasted this.
Her face when she first took a sip of the wine. So you can see behind the scenes footage like that on our Patreon. It's becoming part of our Sip Squad. And as always, just make sure you have your wine glasses ready for next week's episode.
Bye.
Bye.